Welcome back to Hoops HD, everybody. It is Monday, February 10th, the day after a pretty exciting football game.
Woohoo! No, stop that.
I won't do it to you all again. We did that last night. I'm your host. This is our Hoops HD report. I'm your host, Chad Sherwood. We got David Griggs and John Tytel up here. Joby Fortune in the center square. Matt Sikowski and John Slika to his sides. Rocco Miller from Bracketeer.org down there in the bottom row. So we got a full panel and lots to get through in what was a pretty exciting weekend of college basketball that saw a lot of upsets, some interesting things at the top of the polls even that came out today. We're going to get to all of that. But I thought we'd start the show out with by fulfilling a promise I made last night when I did not do a blind resume. So I think we'll do a little blind resume today. Does that sound okay, Griggs?
Yeah, I love blind resumes. We were talking off air. How does the committee select the teams? This is how they do it. All 68. Next.
Yes. So 68 blind resumes. This is how the real selection. No. I've got two resumes here that I'm going to start by admitting these are not great resumes. These are not going to be one seeds or two seeds or even six seeds or seven seeds in all likelihood. But I want to throw it out there to a couple of you.
I already know who these two are.
Well, then I'm not going to throw it to you, Griggs. Left or right. And Tytel, since you wanted one of these last night, let me start with you. Left or right, who do you like better before we get to any guesses?
I'm leaning right for a couple of reasons. One, the predictives are much better, even though JNG right now is a toss-up. The non-conference strength of schedule is worse on the right, but the regular strength of schedule is better on the right. Left is a bit of a home court hero, so I'm leaning right.
It's not right. Who I thought it was. Never mind. I apologize. Yeah.
Rocco, how about you? Would you lean left, or would you lean right as well with Tytel?
Oh, I'm squinting, looking at my phone screen. But
oh, sorry.
No, you're good. I actually figured out the left team. I think it's tough. I definitely like the record overall for the left team, of course, but you have that extra weight at the top for the right. I think it's really close. OIR says team on the right. I guess I can trust that, but I might be surprised. I know the team on the left I have as the third team out today.
Okay, I think you figured out who the team on the left is. Joby, let me go one more opinion here. I know you made a comment about it.
I'm torn here. I will go right, even though I hate that non-conference strength of schedule. I think that would be, if that gets a three in front of it, I think the committee will go out. You know, in this, those 10 spots are important. It's the road wins. I mean, if you notice the team on the left, there's no road until you get to tier three. And so that road win, even though it's 72, isn't that great, and 110 most certainly is not that great. At least they've done something on the road, so I will go right.
Okay, I think I know who it is now.
Oh, let's go ahead.
I think I know who the right is.
All right, Matt, who are the teams?
The team on the right's BYU.
Correct.
Oh, okay, I didn't know.
Oh, shoot, I was wrong.
The team on the left. I need to phone a friend on that one.
Matt, Rocco,
I live near them. I live near them. Let's just put it that way.
That would be the Dons of San Francisco, a team that has not been on many people's radars until I tried to make a case for them last night. But Rocco, I get they're missing the road wins. That's a huge hole, though. They got two good chances left at Gonzaga and Oregon State still, not the San Diego one necessarily, but how close is this team? I guess you said third team out right now, right?
Yeah, I have them third team out. They actually would have been the next team I would have gone to, though, today, just because the other options are all so out of whack with the power conference mush, as I call it. But, you know, like Ohio State, Texas, and Arkansas are still a win away from even being selectable in my view. But obviously, they're all right there, one win away. San Francisco's case, yeah, they just got their best road win of the year at LMU, but it's still buried in quad three. And they get that Oregon State and Gonzaga. Those are the two last big chances at a road win. I'm curious to see, and I'll get confirmation tomorrow, they are going to play Gonzaga at the Chase Center. Maybe they can find a loophole and count that as a neutral court. So they got two – either way, they have two cracks at Gonzaga. I think if they beat – even if it's counted as a home game, if you get Gonzaga and St. Mary's, and they've had an otherwise pretty solid year, I think they got a chance to squeeze in.
Rocco, I can help you with that. They cannot. It will be a home game. It's not the arena. It's who does the management of the event.
That's true, but the Warriors help with it though, and it's all for NIL money. That's the only reason they're playing there. And it's the Memphis game counted as a neutral. That was already done the same with the same management. So that's I was about to
use that as an example of a game that was counted neutral. As neutral because they didn't do it. You say the management's the same. This is a conference game.
Both games are Chase Center. He is correct
about that. Yeah, but you can play you can in theory play a road game on your home court. It's actually happened a couple of times.
that'd be great.
I mean, Wisconsin Milwaukee did it once, and the Palestra did it. I think it was Penn at the Palestra one year. It was technically the road team. But they'll tell you it's who's doing the event management that determines a home or away.
Right. It probably was
now the committee's going to know that it wasn't their campus. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, and it's going to be a lot of Gonzaga fans, like it was last year. It's the second year it's happened now. So, but it's very interesting, and it's good to have the Dons in the conversation. That's for sure. Mm-hmm.
Let's go ahead and go to the standings and results and scores. And let's start things off, of course, in the SEC, where we start most weeks. First of all, those of you who've been watching for a while, I got a new little stat on the screen here. On each of the conferences, we'll be able to see its conference rank. That is according to Ken Palm. Those are Ken Palm conference ranks. So the SEC, the number one conference in the nation, surprisingly.
I didn't realize that. The SEC was number one. That is amazing.
And the new polls are out following Auburn and Duke both losing. And Tytel, let me start with you. Auburn stays number one in the AP poll, falls to number two in the coaches poll.
Setting up the game of the year this coming weekend. As awesome as it would have been, I think, to see Coach Bruce Pearl go undefeated in the best conference in the history of the sport, their luck ran out at home last Saturday in the 9-point loss to Florida. The only encouraging sign is that they trailed by 21 with 14 minutes left, made a nice run to cut it to single digits at the end. And the reason we locked them previously, each of their 8 remaining games are against top 50 KenPom teams. If they go winless, they still have a preeminent profile. Top 10 in the nation in scoring, top 10 in shot blocking. 6 of their top 7 scorers are seniors, along with McDonald's All-American Tahad Pettiford. The X factor for me is shooting guard Denver Jones. When he scores under 4 points, they're 1-2 this year. When he scores 4 points, 20 wins, 0 losses.
That is some deep dive analysis there, Tytel. That is brilliant. Chad, I want to say something and give you the credit. Well, I don't want to, but I should. I've been making a living off this. You discovered that this is just the second time in 18 years that we're going to have a number one versus number one.
It's actually going to be the fourth time in the last 25 years. I'll go one step further. There was a February game. I lost my list, unfortunately. And one of those times was a national championship game between Illinois and North Carolina. So I don't know how much that really counts. But two number one teams playing each other. AP and Coaches Poll number one. But let's talk about a couple other teams.
It was Wisconsin, Ohio State. I remember that one distinctly. Yeah,
Wisconsin, Ohio State was about 2007.
Yeah, and OU, Kansas, we know.
Yeah,
and the OU Kansas just back in 2016 triple overtime game. We'll get to that. That game is coming up this weekend in a second here. But first, let's talk about the team that beat Auburn, Matt. The Florida Gators. How about that performance going to Auburn and winning by 9, and maybe it was even bigger than that.
Yeah, that's the one where I think they got a real shot at a 1 seed. Now, where before that, their metrics said, "Hey, 1 seed consideration." Their wins were not quite at that level. Their wins are at that level now. just that one just totally catapults that profile to for like decent two seed in that middle of the 2 seeds to now. They probably would be the fourth number one seed if the tournament started today.
Well, they'd be close.
Salika, I know you missed our show last night, our bracket rundown show, but Tennessee ended up being our fourth 1 seed and not Florida, although it was pretty close. you know, I mean, and the Volunteers, they had a nice week as well.
Well, one of the things we joked about was Tennessee losing the aggregate against Florida, but they, excuse me, still managed to get a couple wins last week against a red-hot Missouri team at home and also a win at Oklahoma.
Yeah, and I mean, it just goes in. When you look at each of these profiles, I'm still blown away. Joby, Texas A&M, right there as well. How about yes. their week? That win at Missouri, very impressive.
Ooh, no one talks about Texas A&M. They're like the secret team.
Uncle
like
they're going out,
taking care. They're up, you know, Bracket Matrix, and I agree with Bracket Matrix, by the way, on this one. They have them as a two seed. We're talking about three SEC teams on the one line, maybe four, if Duke takes another bad loss. And Texas A&M is like saying, hey, look at me. Great win on the road at Missouri. And Missouri is in the top half of the field. This isn't just like, they beat a Missouri team that's out of the, you know, the preseason, you know, 12th team in the conference sort of thing. They're putting down names, taking away. They're getting wins on the road. Ole Miss earlier was a great road win just a couple of weeks ago. The Aggies and Buzz have it going on. You got to love their defense, the way they get in your face. They have enough scoring that's really producing a consistent play on the offensive end, which sometimes Buzz's teams don't. This Aggie team, hats off to them. And if you ask the average college basketball fan, not just a casual fan, a fan, go, oh, yeah, the SEC is so good, Auburn, Alabama, Tennessee, Florida. A&M's the fifth team out of their – A&M wouldn't even come out of their mouth most likely. Watch out for Buzz.
Oh, yeah. I am with you all the way, Joby.
And, Rocco, I think when we're discussing this conference, we're still talking protective seeds beyond those five teams even. How about Ole Miss? Did they beat Kentucky this last week and then picked up a road win as well?
Yeah, I mean, Ole Miss is tough as heck, and they've had their moments. They're 3 out of 4 now in the win column. It's not easy to stay in the win column in this league. Every night is an absolute war. That's why nobody's getting on more than like a 4-game winning streak pretty much ever except for Auburn. Now Ole Miss gets South Carolina, so nobody wants to be the first team to lose to South Carolina. We'll see if Ole Miss can avoid that landmine on Wednesday, because they do get Egg Bowl round 2 this Saturday, Chad, which will be good. That's a Mississippi State team that got off the schneid themselves with a big road win at Georgia.
Yeah, and Griggs, let's throw another team there. How about Missouri? I mean, this team is right up there as well nationally, number 21 in the polls.
They really are, and I like this team a lot. I thought that they were a bit of a home court hero overall, at least when compared to the other protected seeds. They need to do a little more on the road to get all the way up there.
They won at Florida.
But they did win. Yeah, they won at Florida, and they won at Mississippi State. We haven't been – I mean, as far as them being a protected seed, we haven't been putting them up there yet. I think that we need to see a little bit more – on the road to get them up there, but they are easily in the top half of the bracket. I think they're good enough to play their way up to a protected seed. Whether or not they actually do it, I don't know, but it wouldn't shock me. That's how good they are.
Tytel, one of the most interesting things I think about Missouri, they may have the easiest schedule of all these SEC teams left. I think their hardest games are all behind them at this point.
They do host the Tide on February 19th, well. But yes, compared to some of the teams that have like 3 top 5 games remaining in a row, it's relatively easy. I'll give you that.
Hey, Chad, Missouri didn't win it. They didn't win a game in the SEC last year, so they got the absolute last place schedule this year.
And they're benefiting from it.
Yes, they are. much like Louisville in the ACC.
Go back to – I want to look at something real quick. Go back to Missouri's profile to further Rocco's point. Easiest schedule in the SEC, their out-of-conference schedule is a 192. When you put that together with the easiest schedule in the SEC, you get 29. That's how strong the SEC is. That the easiest one moves you up 180 spots.
It's a nice benefit, for sure.
Yeah. Rocco, let me kind of ask you about the bottom here, because we did a bracket rundown show last night. And I did my own bracket last week as well. And both times we end up with 14 SEC teams in the NCAA tournament field in February, not on, not in November, in February, 14 teams. Now, I know you've got issues with Arkansas and Texas. Quite frankly, I have the same issues with them. But we're looking at a huge number of SEC teams still that are right there in play.
Yeah, and it's getting to a point where I don't think there's many scenarios left where you're not going to get at least 11, so they're going to at least tie the record of the Big East of that super year they had. But there is still upside for 12. What I'm trying to remind myself is to keep an open mind. This is a different era. These teams are so dominant. You're playing a top 50 game almost every night. But I still don't see a path for 14. Even 13 seems unreasonable. So what I did last week, Chad, was I was actually on a show in Gainesville. Is I took just basic KenPom cumulative rest of season. So even if he's saying you're only going to win two games, the cumulative will give you that third or fourth win. So it's about as fair as you can look at it. And just based on, taking quad four games out, I have Arkansas finishing three games short at 11 and 14. I have Georgia finishing one game short, which they could still get in at 11 and 12. And same with Vanderbilt, which I don't think they would get in because they have 3:30 non-conference strength of schedule. No great road wins yet. But the teams that are looking good are Oklahoma with that great non-conference. They would get to 13 and 11. And Texas actually has a favorable schedule down the stretch. Now, you could argue that because Coach Terry is a little bit on the hot seat. Things could get weird down the stretch as well. But based on the math and based on the cumulative, Texas looks promising at finishing 12 and 11 with their remaining schedule. So it really is coming down to all these variables because so many of these teams play each other. And I'll finish with this. Last day of the season could be massive. Texas is at Oklahoma and Georgia is at Vanderbilt.
Oh.
Actually, I have the home teams reversed there. Vanderbilt at Georgia, Oklahoma at Texas, but
But
still
point.
huge games either way.
Yeah, I guess I did
Well, I'm
But
not as
either
excited
way,
as
it
I was
doesn't
when you
matter.
first
That
said that.
is a absolutely huge day for these bubble teams here. And those could be elimination games or even the conference tournament games beyond those could be elimination games. Joby, you had a comment on it?
No, that
Yeah.
Rocco, point taken. That's a way to look ahead because the SEC, like it has been all year, will once again be the viewers must see TV that final weekend, but not because it's Florida versus Auburn like we had this weekend. It's because there are bids going to be on the line. Great call, Rocco.
Yeah, we're going to have more protected
Yeah,
seeds
coming
in
down to the wire.
the SEC tournament than what either of the four regionals will have because they only get four.
That is a good point. And I mean, and Matt, getting back to the top of the SEC here, we're real close to having all four one seeds coming from the same conference. Not quite there yet, I think, but it's
Well,
darn.
get put this way. Four, it's four of the five, four of the top five probably on the S curve right now, all coming from the SEC with Duke probably just about in the middle.
I don't think that's going to happen because I just don't think anybody's going to beat Duke. That's going to knock them off the one line. I know they lost in Clemson, but they're not going back to Clemson. Their hardest games are behind them, and I think Duke wins out.
And Clemson is
Well,
good. I mean, let's not, that's like
they also
Auburn.
beat
That's
Kentucky.
like maybe not Auburn losing to Florida, but that is like Auburn losing to Ole Miss or
Well,
something.
before we jump to the ACC, which we'll get to in a second, let's take a quick look at the upcoming schedule. And as with every single week, we can pretty much circle everything. Auburn with that tough trip to Vanderbilt, that's been a landmine for several teams so far. Alabama at Texas, Florida, Mississippi State, Georgia at Texas A&M, Tennessee at Kentucky. And Griggs, that's only tomorrow night.
That's only tomorrow night. Yeah. Tennessee, Kentucky's good. I mean,
Great
wow.
game.
All of those games are have a storyline. Vandy on the bubble, Auburn, you don't want to get caught looking ahead. Texas also needs a big win. Alabama, tough road game. Florida and Mississippi State, both in the top half of the bracket. Georgia on the bubble. Tennessee and Kentucky, more of a showcase than a stakes game, but what a game.
Again, we got other games. Ole Miss has a road trip on Wednesday. Oklahoma's at Missouri. I know, Tytel, you're excited about LSU and Arkansas. Even more excited about South Carolina and LSU coming up in a couple weeks here. But let's on the serious note, though, the I mean the game, Stalika, Saturday, 4 p.m. ESPN, Auburn at Alabama, number one versus number one, if you take a look at the two polls.
This is something even the Iron Bowl in football could never match.
Never.
I wonder if that's a good question, Slika. Is this the best Auburn-Alabama game possibly ever?
Absolutely.
Even outpacing some of these football games, which they've had some incredible and some huge games, admittedly.
Yeah, and that's even with the Iron Bowl not being played on campus sites until, was it the mid-1980s on the gridiron? But they've always been on campus sites and not basketball, as far as I'm aware.
Yeah, the build-up for this game, and I know Tytel alluded to it, I won't steal his thunder, is enormous. I mean, there's this misnomer that the SEC, it's all football. I mean, they love their football, but it's the basketball, it's the same as anything else. When it's good, the fans are excited. And having some ties to that state in that area, it's off the chain. Like, the buildup for this is enormous. It's going to get a huge rating, at least in the local market.
Is Bama administration hoping they lose the game so they don't have to pay the fine, because the fans will definitely storm the court if they win?
When you have as much money, they will storm the court. If you have as much money as they do, I just don't think they care.
The other big games, of course, we have Vanderbilt, Tennessee, Mississippi, the Egg Bowl here. We have Missouri, Georgia. We have Kentucky, Texas, Arkansas, A&M. I'm sorry. I mean, it is just huge, huge every day. But let's go to the ACC, because we mentioned that. And let's start with, you know, the game here, which was Clemson's upset win over Duke and Griggs. You know, Clemson, you know, controlled the game later into the second half there. I thought they looked really good.
Yeah, Duke led for most of, well, I guess the first 25, 30 minutes or so. But then when Clemson did get the lead, the momentum really shifted and they never gave it back. It's hard to win at Clemson. They also have wins over Kentucky there, who's really tough to beat. So I don't think it's going to be that much of a setback for Duke. I've been big on Clemson. I've been banging the drum. I'm not surprised they beat them on a neutral floor. I don't think they win. I certainly don't think they beat them at Cameron. But Clemson is good enough to beat anybody pretty much at home. Yeah, obviously,
and then they made North Carolina look like a team from the Big South Conference. Tonight's game,
which lots of teams have been doing to North Carolina. Yeah,
it was worse, way worse.
Obviously, Clemson, Louisville having good seasons also. But Joby, I know you want to discuss this Wake Forest team, I championed it about a month ago, and they keep coming on and had a nice hat.
They're in the field
that
right now.
Swept that West Coast road trip that
and
they had
that's
to.
That's the key. Is this was the week where I think determined. Now they still got some weird, tricky games like at SMU that they got to get through and all that, and they don't have besides Duke, they really can't afford too many blips. Maybe they can afford one blip, here or there. Besides Duke. But they are now, I think, squarely in the field now. Once again, Bracket Matrix, which I'll cite too, has them there. J&G is they're up to a 10 seed in the J&G, right on the edge of the 10 line, so that they've got some room to work with. They faced what I thought, this is where Wake stubs their toe. They go out west. They have to play the double swing of Stanford and Cal. And just like it's tough for Stanford and Cal when they come east, it's tough for one of these North Carolina teams to go all the way out west and live out there for a weekend. And to their credit, they took care of business. And it wasn't – you didn't really feel like they were in trouble. Even though they won both by high single digits, they were the better team, and they looked like it, and they didn't have to squeak it out. They looked like a tournament team who took – care of business against a good Stanford team. This is NIT level Stanford team and a Cal team you really do need to take care of. But they did well. And Wake has made their step. And right as I give them their props, they'll promptly go out and lose to the Wolfpack and SMU in the next week.
Well, Rocco, I want to get your thoughts on this SMU team. It's a team that I made a case for last night in our bracket rundown show. Might be in the field, kind of not on that they've done anything great, but they just have that volume of wins and even one less loss than this Wake team.
Yeah. I couldn't believe it. I put them in as the last team today, just held my nose because they have one of those profiles where you're just waiting for that final stamp of approval and you can't find it. But it is hard to go perfect in all your other 18 games, which is what they've done. I know they lost their 5 games against tournament level competition, in a couple cases really embarrassed in the Louisville and the Duke performances. So it's made it even harder because they don't have a top end win really in the top 2A. Of quads, it's bad like that. But at the same time, all that winning has to add up to something. It's a lot of road wins. They're 8-2 road neutral, so all of that's really tough to do. I mean, you'd think there'd be a slip up somewhere, but there's just not yet. And in reality, there's enough decent left. They get the Wake Forest game Joby mentioned on Saturday this week. They'll get two with Stanford still. Actually, no, a road Stanford. And they'll get Clemson at home. Clemson will be like the one that's the juiciest of them all. So obviously, if they fall short in those, they're going to be on the wrong side. But they remain interesting because of those factors. So that's where I'm at with them right now.
You know, the Pitt home game even will help because it will probably be their best win, actually, if they just get that this week. Well,
which is amazing. Pull up Pitt real quick. Not to make a case for them, I just want to see how good of a win that would be.
It'd be Pitt's. Pitt is
not.
You got to look at the sequential.
I don't want to. It's certainly not a home bye game. It's not. But I don't know. Is that really a tournament caliber win, beating a team that's that bad on the road at home?
No, he was just trying to make a point.
2-7 in their last 9. 2-7 in their last.
Like Rock said, my only point was by net, that's the best win of the season.
Right. Okay, yeah, I got you.
But it'll still only be quad 2.
Yeah,
unfortunately.
Deservedly, should be quad 3, honestly.
Yeah.
As far as the rest of the league goes, I mean, Titel, I don't even know if there's anybody that we're looking at besides these first 5 teams at the moment. Is there?
Not the way North Carolina played tonight. I just don't see it happening. If anybody wants to sell me, feel free, but I don't see it.
Yeah, I guess the only – obviously Stanford's pretty far out of it now. They got close a little bit ago, and I will say I was at the Stanford-Wake Forest game last Wednesday, and Jalen Blakes is still injured, and they're obviously much weaker without him. And they barely lost to Wake without him, and Benny Giler had the flu all week, so he missed both games. That's why they – barely squeaked by NC State. And, you know, there's an opportunity there to play SMU. They go to Duke. They go to Louisville. So they're not completely written off, because if Stanford somehow pulls off a miracle at either Duke or Louisville, they would be pretty interesting just because the bubble's that weak.
Yeah. Here's some of the upcoming games.
Syracuse in Miami.
Miami was supposed to be pinned at SMU. I hit the wrong button there. I think the big one probably is this Wake SMU game on Saturday. Look at Louisville's got a pair of road games, at NC State, at Notre Dame, but they did have a slip up against Georgia Tech earlier.
They did. They should win both of those, but you're right. I mean, they are on the road. I still have a parental block feature on my television. I am blocking the Miami Syracuse game so that I don't even accidentally turn it on.
Duke hosting Stanford at Virginia. You know, that going to Virginia is always tough, but maybe not this year. yeah. Big Ten conference. Let's start at the top here, Matt, with the Purdue Boilermakers. They win at Iowa. They take care of USC. And this may be another team that could spoil that SEC party on the one line if they keep winning.
Yeah, this is a quiet climb up the board here where it just doesn't feel like one great event, but a steady stream here. Now, all of a sudden, about a month ago, they're like a 5-6 seed. Now, yeah, they're right probably on the two line if we started the tournament today.
Yeah, and Stalika, Michigan State, another team here that, you know, I still think that this is a great-looking profile. I know they suffered a the recent loss, the recent sweep on their trip to UCLA and USC, but you know, are they back?
You would have figured they would probably get at least one win out west, but obviously getting a win against an Oregon team that's reeling, I'm not sure that's completely righting the ship. I would probably ask in about a week or so, depending on what they do at Illinois, as to whether the Spartans are really back. If they lose at home to Indiana, then yes, their Sparty is going to have a few issues to sort over.
Yeah. And you mentioned that Oregon team, and Rocco, there was a time just a few weeks ago when we were talking about Oregon as, you know, a 2 seed, a 3 seed. We got to look down to 11th place to even find them in the conference now. You know, have you? This is one of the almost a historic collapse at this point, is it not?
Well, there's really no precedent for this 18 team super conference from coast to coast either. So, you know, the travel for the West teams going east, I'll sound like Mick Cronin here for a second, is absolutely brutal. These four teams are going east four different times, whereas anybody else is only coming west once. So they've got that. But I still think there's obviously good talent in the backcourt with Shelstad's a beast. Nate Biddle's been not doing a good job staying out of foul trouble in most of these games. The Michigan State game, they were up by 13 in the first half and just totally let that one slip away. Jace Richardson, by the way, unbelievable performance. That was pretty cool on the Spartan side. But I think Oregon, big picture, they just need a couple get rights. This is the week for that. They get Northwestern at home tomorrow night. Northwestern's very banged up. A couple of their key players were out just recently when they lost to Washington. And they'll get your Rutgers guys on Sunday. Again, nothing against Rutgers, but they're traveling cross country. Oregon's got to win those two this week. If they do that, then they're going to start getting back on the right track. And then they get back on the road again. So, well, but they might be okay by next week.
A few other teams to discuss. Tytel, the Illini, I'm going to pull them up here on the right side of the screen. It's a rather interesting profile with so many good wins, but a lot of losses now, too.
One team that couldn't win at Rutgers, the Fighting Illini. At home? No, at Rutgers.
At Rutgers.
Coach Brad Underwood started 12-3 and has taken a duck-like turn, losing 5 of his past 9. Good news, only 7 regular season games left. Bad news, the schedule is brutal. UCLA, Sparty, Whiskey, Duke in non-conference, Michigan and Purdue. Good luck. For a team that knows how to defend the three-point line, they only allow 30% behind the arc, which is top 25 in the nation. They sure don't know how to make them either. 31% made is bottom 75 in the nation. And in this era of grad transfers, the Illini are succeeding by importing freshmen from around the world, as their top 3 scorers are freshman Kasparas Jakaciūnas from Lithuania, freshman Will Riley from Canada, and freshman Tomice Ivicic from Croatia. With only one senior on the roster and Evansville transfer Ben Humrickhouse, if they all return next year, I don't think they will, but if they all return next year, I think this is like a Sweet 16 team next year.
Unfortunately, we live in the era where you can't say anybody's return next year on any team. That's right. But I do agree that, yeah. Joby, one of the hottest teams, maybe the hottest team, honestly, in the Big Ten right now, after Purdue, is the Nebraska Cornhuskers.
Wow. This is a team that was outside looking in just a few weeks ago. Now they're in. And, you know, I think they might even, like what I mentioned of Wake earlier, they are the ones fighting with Wake to get off the 11 line. And I think they are. I think they and Wake are both in the 10 seed range. They have had 3 really weird streaks. So they have a 6-game win streak in December, and in December that includes good win over UCLA, doubling up Southern, who was undefeated in the SWAC, and blowing out Indiana. You know, not just amazing, but good wins. Then they went on a 6-game losing streak, and the losing streak wasn't like, oh, they played Sparty on the road. And no. Their losses were to Rutgers at home, USC at home. It was just an awful stretch. You know, Iowa, And then now they've won 4 straight. And the 4 straight have actually been tougher games than a lot of the games they lost in that streak. They beat Illinois. They went on the road at Oregon and Washington. So they didn't, it's not like Oregon and Washington had to do the traveling. They did the traveling and did the sweep, and then top it off with a very good win over Ohio State this weekend. This team, you know, hey, it could go as wrong. But if their season is any indication, They could go on a six-game losing streak right after this, given it's gone 6-6 and now 4. But my prediction is they'll beat Maryland, they'll beat Northwestern, and then lose out to teams like Penn State and Minnesota.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty on, bro. And again, they're just not consistent. And they would be had they not made the worst administrative decision in athletics history.
Moving on here, Matt. I'd like to get your take on the UCLA Bruins. This is a team that I made a case last night. I think that this is a 5-seed towing a 4-seed. Nobody else agreed with me, but 7 wins in a row now for this team.
Yeah, I'm closer to you, and this is – I don't think a ton of times you could use the human factor of things going on off the court. UCLA is one. I mean, given that road trip ahead – having to be at the same time as the LA Wildfires.
That was the Maryland Rutgers, actually the Nebraska Maryland Rutgers games. All three of them, the Wildfires are going on at the same time.
And that's where, like, I'm willing to give by a little slack to where, just strictly on paper, I can see why you might have him right on the sixth line. But with that, I think if you throw that out as kind of a weird outlier, all of a sudden they are looking kind of right on the border of a protected seed. So I'm pretty close to you, like. Had I submitted a list last night, it wasn't doing prop bet game, and then I probably would have had UCLA as a 5.
Chad, I will say this. If they get this next one tomorrow, I'm with you.
Well, Rocco, let me ask you, do you think the committee will factor that in, especially that Maryland-Rutgers trip, while you got the fires going on back home and you get swept in it?
Yeah, I mean, I certainly think it should be included in the discussion and the presentation on what UCLA's journey was all about. It was obviously a lot to deal with for a bunch of the people involved. But at the same time, I agree with what you're saying. UCLA in a vacuum grades out probably as a good protected seed potential right now. The issue is, like, between, I would say, about 15 all the way to about 23, there's good options. So 3 of those teams still have to be a 6. And then that fills up all of the 5s, and only a couple of them get picked for protected. And that's kind of what happened with me. They were just losing out on a few of those comparisons. And again, like Matt said, that's all based on just the paper. But I don't think you can go back and rewrite a loss entirely. You can just use it as your consideration. But I just think there's a lot of good teams in this range, and they're close.
Stalika, how about the Maryland Terrapins? Interesting week, including the loss at Ohio State. And then they did come back and bounce back and beat Rutgers in a game that, while you and I were in Philadelphia for a doubleheader.
In the case of Maryland, they were going up against an Ohio State team that was going to be a little more desperate. It would have been a little bit of an icing on the cake for the Terrapins to get the sweep against the Buckeyes, get another tier one, but that's not going to punish them a whole lot there. At least they did bounce back with the win against Rutgers, where they never really pulled away until very late.
Upcoming this week here, let me stick with you, there are some pretty good games starting tomorrow night, the Purdue at Michigan game and the UCLA at Illinois game.
Great night. Ohio State in a must-hold serve game against Washington. And Rocco, if Washington beats them, they'll be doing you a huge favor, because first of all, you're a fan, and secondly, they're proving your point.
If you're talking about the Ohio State game on Wednesday, I mean, it would be nice, because I'm tired of having to take Ohio State out just because they have so many losses. This would just kind of bury them once and for all. But if not, you know, Ohio State's been such a weird team. The reason why Michi Johnson's not on the roster anymore, there's just a lot of weird variables going on with that team. And
Chad, before we move on, because we got into this last night, but Rocco wasn't there to hear it, can we pull up Ohio State real quick? Because I kind of want to get his reaction to my take. I know that you like to grade out the top 3 tiers, and I know that they have a losing record, but, like, I think we could also agree that not all top 3 tiers are the same. And Auburn and Illinois and A&M and at Whiskey and at Maryland, I mean, when you're talking teams that are nets of 16 or better and you lose all of those away from home, what are those teams' combined records at home? It's got to be like 97-3 or something. So, I mean, it's not – I think you got to factor in that those are not just any regular tier 2 or 3 or 3 loss. Those are losses that most protected seeds would have a hard time winning and probably wouldn't win.
Yeah, no, I think those are good points, and I also like out of any of the teams that have been under 500 in this area, these top three quads is we call them meaningful games. Ohio State's the one I've been get putting in regularly because they have that win at Mackey. They're the only team that wins there. It's an unbelievably hard place to win, sixth hardest road win by the net and all that. But my biggest thing about Ohio State, on top of all that, is they've lost at home four times. I mean, come on. And if in their 16 hardest games, you can stretch that all the way into 2B, quad 2B, they're 6-10. I mean, that's just not a successful team in my eyes.
And one of those losses is really a tier three loss, Pitt.
There you go.
Thank you,
maybe
two of
Joe.
them in Indiana as
Yeah,
well.
who's Indiana? I like Pitt more than Indiana.
So I like to look at how many times you lost at home just to kind of balance that, you know?
There's some of the other
And they
key
have
games.
lost at home.
Key games this week, Maryland, Nebraska, Wisconsin at Purdue in a big one. We even discussed Wisconsin tonight. Michigan State at Illinois. Michigan at Ohio State. Ohio State really needs that game here on Sunday.
What about Wednesday? Huskies are playing better. They might get them.
Yeah, well, Washington at Ohio State. It says Tuesday on the screen. That is a Wednesday game. That's a error with from the NCAA website that hopefully we'll correct it tomorrow morning.
Shows how many people are paying attention to Washington basketball chat.
Pretty much. Let's jump over to the Big 12 conference, where Matt, why don't we start top here with Houston? They do get a 2-0 week. Again, didn't play the toughest of competition, but here they are at 19-4 overall and number six in both polls.
Yeah, they're if a Big 12 team gets to the one line, I know people probably would think Iowa State. I would bet Houston if one can get there. And that now they probably just about to have to win out and then maybe take one in the semis and finals of the Big 12 tournament. And that because they didn't do a whole lot out of conference. But that's one, given that their level of potential play could go on a run to maybe, like I said, take one of those SEC one seeds away.
Yeah, and it's kind of funny that the team title that's being most discussed as the number one seed after Houston is not the second place Arizona or third place Texas Tech team. It's the fourth place Iowa State team.
Isn't it? Coach TJ Otzelberger was 17-2 just a couple of weeks ago. Then he did, in duck-like fashion, a three-game losing streak. He did get back on track by destroying TCU by 30 points last Saturday, 18-5 overall. He's got three winnable games coming up, and then the huge road trip to Houston on February 22nd. There is no need to push the panic button for this team. They're top 20 in the country in offensive efficiency and top 20 in the country in defensive efficiency. And before you drop them too far in your bracket, I want you to remember that Milan Momcilovic, who was 2024 all-conference freshman team, he's finally back from injury. During the 7 games he missed, the team went 3-4. When he's healthy, they're 15-1 with a 2-point loss to Auburn and Maui.
Wow. Stalika, let's talk about Tytel's school. How about Arizona? They had a heck of a weekend. They're now on a six-game winning streak after beating that red-hot Texas Tech team.
This is a team that's probably headed more towards a protected seed now that they have, I believe, a tie for first place here. Now they've obviously avenged the win against Texas Tech. That's going to help matters considerably, so they at least get a split among them. You look at their upcoming schedule. Obviously, you don't want to be overlooking K-State, but with Houston and Baylor looming, it's more chances for the Wildcats to potentially solidify first place right here, more of a unification bout type game.
Yeah, and it's kind of funny. I'm just looking at these numbers now. Their OAR is up to 8. Their predicted metrics are up there too. That says that this team really should be a protected seed. And maybe we're doing them a disservice putting them on the 5 line lately.
Yeah,
Although I think we got them at the 4 yesterday.
the committee has said for years, and I believe them, and they've shown every sign of evidence that they do this, that they look at the whole season, and I've got no problem with that. But the reality is, Arizona was they sort of slept through their alarm. February Arizona would blow November Arizona out of the gym, and whether or not they will factor that in when it comes to seeding, should they?
But
And yeah,
Griggs,
I think they should.
end of the day, November Arizona didn't suffer any bad losses. They just suffered a lot of losses.
Yeah, and I think they, yeah.
It's not like they lost the Old Dominion and the Canisius games back in November.
True, yeah.
Let's talk about a couple other teams in this conference, though. Rocco, maybe with the team that we should not be discussed in terms of a bid right now, but should be discussed in terms of the conference is this Kansas State team, who is unbelievably hot.
Thank you, Chad. So, in the last 20 days, you can include their loss, their last loss to Baylor. They've won five in a row. They're the number one team in the country during those 20 days. It includes that loss. So they're better than Houston. They beat, they've beat Kansas. They won at Hilton. They've had some dominant performances. They're certainly helping Drake's at large case. So it's been awesome. It's been awesome. But at the same time, you can't go back and undo that 9 out of 10 streak that they lost 9 out of 10. So they still have like two more weeks of good basketball they need to deliver on in order to get into the bubble conversation. But if they can play their way in, at least from a wins and losses standpoint, they're going to be safely in with the wins they already have. So it's just a matter of winning consistently till the finish line. We'll see if they can do it. Tomorrow's game with Arizona is extremely intriguing for all the reasons you said about Arizona. Kansas State, I'm bringing the reasons for them. I'm not even sure if Arizona's ever gone to Kansas State before. So there's an extra thing to keep in mind as tomorrow's game plays out. I'm amazed that they put it all together like that on the fly, but obviously they had the resources to get these players. They're finally coming together, and there's still a lot of talent there.
Okay, go ahead, Jed. Sorry.
Yeah, let me just ask you, Rocco, on that note, you look at the rest of the schedule. Only the Arizona and Iowa State games are games against teams that are clearly solidly tournament teams left. There's a couple bubble teams here, BYU, UCF. Yeah. If they just lose those two and win the rest, that gets a fine win. Aren't they kind of there?
Pretty close. I mean, it's just more about taking on too many losses. So at that point, they've got 13 losses. If you assume a Big 12 tournament loss, that's 14 losses. So yeah, that might be the max. So they've got to keep hitting an inside straight, but there is a path, and the way they're playing, I mean, they might be favored in the Big 12 tournament if they go in that hot.
Chad, you know, it kills me to say this, but I think Cincinnati is more of a bubble team than UCF at this point. Look at their head-to-head from the previous week, because that home loss by the Knights against the Bearcats was really damaging to the Knights.
I'm not really sure either one of them is at this point.
They both got to prove that losing record against the top three quadrants get serious. But go ahead, Griggs. You had a point.
Well,
to
I was
make
just going
to
say, K-State has three games in 6 days. They got Arizona at home, and then they go on the Beehive road trip. We do a bracket show on the evening of the 17th. If K-State wins those three, I bet we select them.
After doing it the 16th, but next Monday we'll do one of these shows here.
I don't know what day it is. I'm sorry. Big Monday. Never mind. Big Monday, they won't get in yet. I think they need to win those three before our committee takes them, so they won't be in on Sunday. But they're getting close.
As we record this, Baylor is trailing Houston. It looks like it's at halftime by about 8 points. We've already mentioned the other key games this week. Arizona, Kansas State, believe it or not, is a key game. As is
Houston, Arizona.
Houston, a huge one on Saturday, Houston, Arizona. We've also got West Virginia at Baylor. But West Virginia definitely needs a few more wins. K-State at BYU.
Jayhawks in the Beehive.
And look at this week for Arizona, actually. At Kansas State, hosting Houston, at Baylor. Huge week for Arizona.
The other thing I was just going to say on the league is that Baylor just got – I mean, they're playing right now, but they just got healthy fully for the first time last Saturday. They looked really good in that UCF win. I'm wondering if Baylor's going to turn it on down the stretch. We've been waiting for them.
Didn't they just lose somebody for the season today, though?
Who's
that? I
didn't
hear that. Yeah. Did they?
Or am I thinking of the wrong team here? Give me half a second here. Josh Ojemwaya is done for the season with a knee injury.
Ooh, that hurts. They don't have a ton of depth down low there.
Yeah.
He played 5 minutes against UCF, so it must have happened during the game. They're finally healthy.
Man.
Wow.
They're going to have to score about 90 a game now.
At least the other guys are back.
Everyone else is – the rest of the guys are back, yes. Let's jump over to the Big East. The Big East here. Joby, I want to start with you and start with the team that is in sole possession of first place. How about the Johnnies?
I think that they are ridiculously underrated nationally right now. I mean,
at number eight,
Well, no. The polls, but look at, if you look at what bracketologists have them at, they're not even a protected seed right now. That's a joke. They're leading the Big East. They just came off a win against Matt's Marquette team, who is a protected seed in most, you know, most bracketology. And they went on the road and beat the two-time defending champions, UConn. Hey, UConn's not UConn necessarily, but they're still, you go into stores, you get the win. That's a big deal. And they put up a gaudy record, and all of a sudden they're out of conference. Is starting to look just a little bit better than it did. Kansas State, heard of them before, you know, out of nowhere. This team is deserving of respect, deserving of being, I think, on the three line right now.
They have a stretch of winnable games ahead of them. Creighton is really, really tough, one of the hotter teams in the country, but they get them at home. That's going to be a really fun game. But I think the opportunity is there. I can't speak for, like, bracketologists, Joby, but I do think that they just sort of go from week to week. And the one thing we've been saying about the Johnnies all year long is how backloaded their schedule was. And maybe they just haven't adjusted to that yet. But if you're asking me, is this team good enough to end up on the three line? I think they are. And I think when that happens, they'll be projected there.
Yeah, I wrote a long blurb about St. John's this morning on my post, and they moved their way up to a three seed today. And it surprised me because they were a five going into the week, going into that UConn game. But that UConn game checked a lot of boxes they needed. They needed a road win. They needed a win against another win against the field. It's a really high level net road win, and all their other records are phenomenal because they've only lost three games all year. So they actually started winning out on comparisons against the teams like Michigan State and Wisconsin, and scooted into that last spot on the three seed.
And what's great about them is we're going to get to see them play the entire Big East. This isn't a case of, as we pointed out with the, Missouri getting that, SEC, not that the SEC has any bad schedule to have this year, but the Johnnies, you can't say, well, the schedule was nice to them. No, they're going to go to Marquette on the last game of the year. They will play everybody. Big East isn't what it normally is, but that doesn't change the fact that it's still a solid conference, and they are in first place with only one loss in that solid conference.
Yeah. Tytel, in second place, right behind them, and with a 9-game winning streak right behind their 10, is this Creighton team. And how about how hot this team is? And are they towing that protected seed line as well at this point?
They are. Can't argue with the winning streak. Can't argue with beating Kansas and at UConn and beating St. John's, which only three teams have done all year. Marquette win. If Marquette's your fourth best win, you're doing something right, as Matt will be quick to point out, even though they did lose at Marquette. Three tier two losses is a lot. We haven't seen that so far from most of the top tier teams, but all explainable. Although I was at the Georgetown game, they got destroyed by 24, like hard to argue, but it's the fact that they've won nine in a row after having Pop Isaacs injured is amazing. Like, we talk about other teams getting people back, like Iowa State getting Momchilovic, and Rocco talked about Baylor getting healthy. Creighton is not getting healthy, but they're still winning. It's very impressive, and I don't think they're going to win out, but, like, very tough week ahead for them, arguably the toughest of anybody in this conference.
Yeah, UConn home at St. John's. But, Matt, I pulled up your Marquette team on the left there, and I don't know if you want to discuss it or not, but a 3-game losing streak now.
That's one against the other three definite tournament teams in the league. So, like, not super, super concerned. Love the play. They haven't been as good since the new year started. It's definitely stepped off from what they started the year at. But I think with the schedule, and they're banged up. Like, that's one. Like, Stevie Mitchell actually hasn't been practicing all year. And I think you saw it, his legs were dead in the Creighton game, and that Chase Ross has a bad left thumb. So, like, it's things where that week off upcoming after the DePaul game is sorely needed for a couple of guys. Either that Ben Gold might have the recurrence of his shin splints he had in the summer between his freshman and sophomore year as well.
Stalika, You and I were at the Xavier Villanova game yesterday, followed by the UMass LaSalle game as well. But how about your Musketeers? Unfortunately, not looking good right now.
Well, they blew probably their last chance at, well, except for a possible home game against Creighton. That was probably their last chance of getting a Q1 game on the road. So obviously that's going to be a major black mark on their schedule, even if they were to win out the rest of the way. Because at this point, they're going to have to go for quantity of wins, because clearly quality of wins are not going to be there this year, because the win at Marquette is the only real notable one that they have.
Yeah, unfortunately, they got to play a lot better than what we saw yesterday in Philly to get back there. And, it was a shame because they had been coming on strong for a while. Let's
They had a good couple weeks there, but God,
I think the loss at St. John's really killed them, because that basically diffused any momentum they had coming out of Milwaukee.
Key upcoming games here: UConn at Creighton tomorrow. St. John's has the road trip to Nova Wednesday, and big one Sunday: Creighton and St. John's national TV FS1
awesome.
Game.
Yeah,
MSG.
Yeah.
Hey, by the way, UConn at Creighton tomorrow is not only Dollar Beer Night, but it's also Red Panda at halftime. So it's going to be awesome in Omaha.
Oh, forget it. Show's over. Everyone, just get to Creighton right now.
I'm leaving and driving to Omaha right now.
Let's go. We'll also highlight Xavier at Providence, because we may have to check the roof at the amps for possible leaks. You know, something weird always happens in that game.
Oh, God, that was the best game ever. Let's it had a quicker. Rain delay, and what was it? Double overtime. It was the best game
Triple
ever.
Triple overtime.
Yeah.
Let's take a real quick look at a couple other conferences. The American, at this point, the only team we're paying serious attention to is Memphis and Griggs. They did what they had to do this week. They took care of Tulsa, and then they got their revenge on Temple for that loss earlier in the season.
Yeah. If you pull Memphis up, I don't know. I've always said this about teams that are sort of in this situation where you feel like that they're undermatched by their league and by their remaining schedule. Do they sort of get bored with their season between now and the NCAA tournament? And because of that, will they drop a game? You are everybody's showcase game. Like, you got to go to UAB. They're going to be way up for it. You got to go to Wichita. You would think that Memphis would win those easily, but when you don't have the stimulation of showcase games and big atmospheres and games that mean something, and all you're doing is really holding serve and what amounts to tier three-ish type games, do you just kind of go to sleep?
That's what they got to avoid here. They got two road games this week. They are going to South Florida on Thursday. They are going to Wichita State on Sunday. That's always a tough trip. Also, that Wichita.
Yeah, it is. It's still the Roundhouse. Wichita is not as good as we've seen in the recent past, but they're still pretty good. But I think this is a Memphis. I don't know where the committee will seed them, but I think they have a high ceiling and can win a couple games in the NCAA tournament.
Over in the West Coast Conference, Rocco, we talked about the San Fran team, who's now half a game up on the Zags at the start of the show. What about the team that they beat on Thursday night, the Gales, who still have a pretty darn impressive profile?
Yeah, they do. And St. Mary's is – that's what was the other part of the result that was just so impressive, that the Dons beat them while Gales were on their hot streak. They, you know, I had seen them the week before go on that 30-0 run to crush Santa Clara on the road. St. Mary's only made 3 3-pointers in that San Francisco loss. I think they were like 3 for 23 from three. So credit to the Dons, but also got a little bit of luck there. That last shot by St. Mary's could have easily gone in and they would have hit the game winner. So they followed that up and got back to their normal averages and pounded Oregon State, which is no small feat. They're only the second team to win at Oregon State. Gonzaga couldn't do it. So I thought that was really impressive. And that just shows the kind of character St. Mary's is, and they've got another big one tomorrow hosting Santa Clara for round two on a special Tuesday edition of the WCC. We like those around here because we don't get very much West Coast basketball during the midweek. So, but yeah, I really no concerns about that San Francisco loss. It was just a huge breakthrough for the Dons.
Gonzaga, who is now going to be hosting San Francisco in a huge game coming up on, I guess it's on Thursday night. Big game here. And Titel, I keep looking at this Gonzaga profile, and when you look at wins and losses, you're kind of like, eh. But then you look at the metrics, and you're like, oh, wow. What do you do with a team like that?
You're the J&G. You put them in an 8-9 game and flip a coin. The San Francisco game will be huge because I think they'll win the next two, although they certainly will not overlook at Washington State. The St. Mary's rematch after watching the first game, maybe, certainly out for revenge. And then tough – it's a very tough – I mean – I'll defer to Rocco. He's the king of the West Coast. Like, is this one of the most difficult Gonzaga closing schedules you've ever seen? Because it looks kind of hard to me.
Yeah, I mean, it has to be because up until adding these two Pac-12 teams, there was never this kind of depth before. Even the year with San Francisco breaking through as the third team in a couple of years ago with Todd Golden his last year, the middle of the league was still pretty light and the bottom of the league was still really bad. And we still have a couple of really bad teams, but there's more money in the league. Even LMU at seventh place right now, they're talented. They beat Santa Clara. They can hang with teams. They gave San Francisco a battle on Saturday. So, they've got a couple guys that'll probably play professional ball. So it's a really good depth league. I'm not sure what happened to Wazoo. They got swept by Pacific, which is just crazy. But obviously they've had a decent first year under Coach Riley, so I don't want to give them too hard of a time.
Upcoming games this week, Rocco mentioned tomorrow night, Santa Clara, St. Mary's game. Huge one Thursday night, San Francisco at Gonzaga. That's the other one to really circle.
Yeah.
Let's jump over to Joby, to your favorite conference, the Mountain West. What have we got? A zero bid league right now, Joby? Do we lose Joby?
Oh, no.
He's boycotting this segment.
He's boycotting the Mountain West segment.
The Mountain West has turned him to stone because he was frozen for a moment.
I'm back. Yes, my favorite conference. Well, and the travails of the Mountain West and my displeasure is well documented on this podcast. But one team that has usually avoided my scorn is San Diego State. And the reason why is very simple. They actually go out and they schedule people. These teams, no one wants to play them. Sorry. People are playing San Diego State. Yeah, you know, and it can be local like Gonzaga, but it can also be far away like Creighton, it's Oregon, Houston. These are good teams that San Diego State played this year out of conference. So, hey, this is one of those normal years. San Diego State takes care of business in conference. They get a bid. Hey, this year they haven't been quite as good. Okay, that's fine. Until we've gotten to the last six games, this team stinks. It just does. Oh, they're 4-2 though. They're 4-2. Let me run through the six game stretch, starting with a loss at home to a not good UNLV team, followed by they won a road game in overtime over 300 Nets Air Force by one. Follow that, good win over Nevada. You could argue one way or another since it was away. But then the next three, San Jose and Wyoming by a single two-point score. And then the loss, the well-earned loss like they got with UNLV comes this weekend to probably a better than anybody else they played Colorado State team. And that's kind of the point. They are Colorado State. That's how good they are. And Colorado State screams NIT to anyone on this call.
Oh, yeah. I think they can get in.
They can get into the Mountain West tournament. I agree with you,
guys.
Colorado State does have Utah State left twice, so let's not close the book.
Yeah, they have chances, but right now, I don't have any trust that San Diego State beats Utah State. I mean, Utah State is a tournament team. They've earned it to this point in the season. San Diego State is just playing so poorly, and they've gotten lucky in three of their wins. They've gotten lucky against teams that are tier four. I want to stress that. Tier four, they are skating by. Not tier three, tier four. This team is struggling right now, and you could see a lot more. I mean, Tim Miles has a decent shot at him. in the next showdown. He really does. Watch.
Oh, of course he does.
I'll tell you, we could talk about, you know, Utah State and New Mexico both playing really well here, but Rocco, I want to get your take on one other team. Is Boise State suddenly close to making the field with you? And I know they have a really, really bad loss down there at Boston College, but.
Well, that's an interesting dynamic by itself. But yeah, I think Boise State with the 4-game win streak right now, they're starting to work their way back in. I think they're like my 8th team out today. So they're, but they've got enough on the remaining schedule to get dangerous. They've got a New Mexico game. They've got a Utah State, and they go to San Diego State, Joby's favorite team, on Saturday. So, and Boise State, we've seen this for years under Coach Rice. They get better and better. They get better and better, and they usually play really well in February and early March. So if they finish on that usual roll, they've got a chance to squeak in. I think that if you're like the Mountain West representative in the committee room, you're saying, hey, we played Boston College in the middle of the Caribbean Islands, lost by 2 points. They're a power conference team. It's not our fault they fell apart, that kind of thing. But it's an interesting loss. And then the Washington State loss, too, now. That used to look okay. Now it's looking worse and worse with Washington State being out of the top 100.
Yeah, but at the same time, Clemson and St. Mary's, those wins are getting better. Yeah, so, I mean, you got two, like, opposite forces working.
And honestly, if you have a couple, like, really good pieces to look at on the good side, like, that's better than being SMU, I think, who has absolutely nothing to look at.
And can't you also say, hey, look at our conference mate, New Mexico. They also have a tier 3 and a tier 4 loss, and everyone's putting them in the field.
Right.
And VCU got the same profile.
VCU, we'll talk about in a minute. They're in a similar boat with their weird Seton Hall loss.
VCU will
not in the at-large field.
VCU has other issues.
Real quick, upcoming schedule. I think the key, one of the key games here is – well, we've got the Colorado State at Utah State game first.
That's a big one, yeah.
But that Boise State San Diego State game on Saturday, I think we got to circle that one.
I think so, too.
Meanwhile, and of course, Sunday, Utah State at New Mexico. Thanks. Yeah, Matt. But one last conference real quick here. Still not quite under the radar, the Atlantic 10. Matt, VCU had a nice week, actually. Picked up a pair of wins, including that win at Dayton on Friday night.
Yeah, that was a big win for them. That's not quite Q1 anymore. I think that might be Q2.
It is number 75 today. It is just barely Q1.
So that is a Q1 win for them. So they're now 1-1 in Q1. We're 4-4 in Q2. We're 7-man. For an A10 team at this point of the year to have only played 11 games in the top 3 quadrants. A lot of that's that lovely 292 strength of schedule. That should be worse than that.
That's going to submarine them. They're not going to get selected.
No, that's what I just that I put 53rd strength of record, 57th with the wins over bubble. That put it this way, you might argue like even a Gonzaga whose numbers aren't great in those two metrics, but they have great predictives, have a couple of decent wins. You can see maybe Gonzaga sneaking by, not being great in that. VCU, no, that's not, like I could see a VCU being left out within the 30s in that, much less the 50s.
And some of their, I mean, they do make mention of an attempt to schedule. They did play Miami. You could argue that they thought that they would be good, but
I think that was in their preseason event.
It was in the Charleston Classic.
Yeah.
Loses bracket after losing to Seton Hall.
Right.
Yeah.
So and it's like William and Mary and Georgia Southern and LMU and Bellarmine and whoever Elizabeth City Street is.
That's state. But
who knew those teams just wouldn't play out?
Let's move on real quick.
Hey, can I make one point?
Yeah, go ahead, Ron.
Go ahead.
Oh, sorry. I just want to on the VCU real quick. The one thing I like about them, they're one of the most dominant home teams in the country. They haven't had a game at home go closer than 12 points. And in general, all their losses are by single digits. Nobody's been able to just blow this team out. That stupid Seton Hall loss was in overtime. They've been only lost in squeakers, really. The 9-point loss at St. Louis is their biggest defeat. So they're obviously really good, which is why their performance numbers are good. And I think if they can keep picking up A-10 road wins, it might add up to enough. We'll see.
Big storms scheduled for tomorrow. Going into Wednesday here, so we'll see if that VCU GW game even happens on Wednesday. We might be getting some postponements,
we're expecting 6 inches in Washington. Yeah.
Same here up in Jersey. Salika, how about LaSalle and UMass?
Well, here's the underlying storyline for here. With that win, Angry Frank's team is now tied for fourth with Dayton, and because of their win, they're actually in a double bye right now. We only got to see half of that game, but the one half we did see is where Rasul Diggins went off and ended up with 34 points in his homecoming to Philadelphia.
Yeah, we saw it was a close game the first half. Unfortunately, we got stuck in traffic getting from the Wells Fargo Center over to the new building there in LaSalle and only got a second half of the game.
Well, same building, but just it's definitely refurbished from what it had been before.
Refurbished, reconfigured. They actually switched the direction of the court and everything in there. Upcoming this week, George Mason. They've got they're technically your first place team. They're at St. Louis and then hosting St. Joe's, while VCU at GW. But that's it for the major conferences here. Let's run to final thoughts and get out of this show here. And Titel, I need the screen share, so I'll start with you.
First of all, everybody who wants to send hate mail to the puppet, I can confirm he does live on Elizabeth City Street. Secondly, my final thought is about great point guard Stephen Ashworth. Picture here. He's always been a great free throw shooter. He's never shot worse than 86% from the line during any of his 5 years of college basketball. This year, he's on the precipice of history. So the record is Missouri State freshman Blake Ahern, 97.5% in 04, which has stood for over two decades. Through his first 23 games this year, Ashworth has made 83 of 85. So he's just above Ahern at 97.6%. 7 regular season games left, at least one in the Big East tourney, probably at least one in the NCAA tourney. It's very hard to ask anybody to shoot for perfection, but this kid's missed one free throw since late November. He is a legit shot to break the record, so I hope he goes out there and kicks some Ashworth.
All right, Joby.
I don't know if you guys discussed this last night, but there is a team and a few of us offline have talked about. There is a team that has gone a power five team that has gone winless on the road for the last year. But yet in between has won an ACC tournament by going through 5 neutral court games and making the Final Four. Your North Carolina State Wolfpack, what's going on your road record? Your Griggs's favorite team, I think, right now. But don't despair. You close the season at Miami.
Oh, man.
Circle that game. Matt, you're up next.
I will say, go through where we start off with the SEC, which we should. The one thing I did see is, if you want to pull up the SEC standings real quick, if you can, we see the top 10, all 500 or better. After that, we see 3-7s and 4-7s. That might be an interesting dividing line to where, say, if the SEC doesn't get the 13 or 14 they're projected to now, if this holds and say, yeah, there's that gap between 10 and 11 and it stays that way, I think at least 2, if not 3, or maybe even all 4 of those all get left home if they're a couple of games behind the top 10.
I agree. I think at the end of the day that these teams play out, which is why I'm focusing in on these teams like the SMUs and the Wake Forest and the teams with the gaudy records, but haven't beat anybody. Let me go over now to Salika.
With only 4 weeks left in the regular season, we're starting to see some bubble watch updates come out of major pages like Fox Sports and ESPN. Now, a sign that ESPN might be a little too heavy on predictive metrics is when you see teams like Louisville with, let's say, a 50% chance of making the NCAA tournament, and teams like Cincinnati at a supposedly a 60% chance, and Wake somewhere around 20 to 30. I find that extremely hard to believe, and I can only imagine that's because certain teams have better predictives than others. But hey, if the Bearcats are able to beat Utah at home this week and beat Iowa State on the road, we'll have that discussion, but otherwise, take it with a huge grain of salt.
Rocco.
Couple injury notes. Berkey, Bayuk, Tunsil, Nebraska's 7'3 Turkish beast, is going to miss the next game, probably the whole week. They have a couple dicey ones at Northwestern and a home Maryland game. I forget the order. So that could be interesting when we were talking about Nebraska. I wrote that down. Chad Baker-Mazzara also went down in that Auburn loss to Florida. Of course, Auburn has a massive week again. He's been cleared to play, it looks like, against Vanderbilt tomorrow. So key component to that loss, though, against Florida, him going down. And the team I wanted to talk about, we just whipped through the American, so I missed my chance, was Florida Atlantic. That's all right. Not much to talk about bids-wise. But Florida Atlantic, they're winning right now by 14. Their three last games in a row, again, playing at American-level competition, but winning them all by 20-plus, really starting to get things humming under first-year head coach John Jacobs, of course, came in with a great background out of Baylor and lots of success as an assistant. They run a really fun system, fourth-best offense in the last month per Torvik, and looking and shaping up to be a pretty dangerous team as we head into the end of February, early March. Keep your eye on the Owls. They'll get Memphis on February 23rd. That will be fascinating because they still have some discipline things to work out, but they have a really fun system and it's getting better with age.
All right, Griggs.
Okay, I'm going to start off with a little bit of an interactive final thought. Going back 30 years to 1994, the three-point line was only 7 years old. Windows 95 wasn't coming out for another year. The list of programs or in teams that have been to either five Sweet 16s or been beyond it twice is long. I mean, off the top of my head, a lot of programs that aren't even blue bloods have done it. I think Miami has certainly done it. Has Washington done it, Rocco?
Sweet 16s, three of them under Romar.
Okay, yeah. So I think they've been that far. Several Big Ten teams have done it. Stalika, Xavier Musketeers have done it. Who what was that, Joby?
Virginia
has. Yeah, Virginia has certainly done it. Here's who hasn't done it. Indiana, since 1994, basically in the post-turntable era, they just haven't had a lot of success. They've been to four Sweet 16s in the last 30 years and been beyond it once. So when you take that into account and then you take into account who their fans think the candidates are to be the next coach, it's just hilarious.
On that note, a couple of things, actually. First of all, I want to give a quick shout out to the Akron Zips and the Yale Bulldogs as being the only two teams left in the nation that are undefeated in their conference play. Southern Jaguars went down tonight. Second of all, we'll talk about it next week, but coming up this Saturday, 12:30 on CBS, is the NCAA tournament bracket, midseason bracket reveal. So something to keep an eye on. We'll definitely discuss that next week. But on behalf of David Griggs, John Tytel, Rocco Miller, check him out at bracketeer.org, Matt Sikowski, Joby Fortson, John Salika, I'm Chad Sherwood. Thanks for joining us. We'll be back Wednesday with Under the Radar, Sunday night with a bracket rundown, next Monday with another Hoops HD report. Talk to you again real soon.